Welcome back into the Mean Streets podcast. The Alabama Crimson Tide headed to the Final Four for the first time in school history. An 89-82 win over Clemson. William Galloway joined in studio with Britton Johnson. BJ, you are part of this program. You're a part of this Alabama basketball family. How does it feel for the Alabama Crimson Tide to be headed to the Final Four for the first time in school history?
I have been lacking the words for the last couple of days. Just for everyone that's followed the program closely, really for the last decade plus, for us to be here, it's a surreal thing. Even though to an extent, it's kind of expected. Like, we've been building to it, but for it to become a reality seems almost too good to be true. You know, it's ironic that today is April Fool's Day. We were joking about opening with some Auburn thing and then just April fooling our way out of it, but it almost does feel like an April Fool's prank being pulled on us. Like, we're arrived, we're on the national stage, and that we are, you know, a program that's here to stay. You know, I think that sometimes you get a run. This isn't a shot at all at NC State. They might win the whole thing for all we know. Sometimes you get a run where it's like, this kind of came out of nowhere. And it, not always are those replicable. But when you get a run like the one Alabama had, it doesn't feel fluky. It feels like something that has been being built towards over the last few years, and finally we've kind of broken through that glass ceiling and arrived. So it's just so exciting.
So growing up as an Alabama basketball fan, going through, you know, at our age, Gottfried early on, some of our first memories, and then you get the Grant era and the Johnson era, and there was plenty of opportunities for success. You know, there was Colin Sexton. There was, even though we lost to Creighton, establishing that rivalry with Creighton back in the early 2010s in the NCAA tournament, there was a expectation. Maybe not an expectation isn't the right word. There was a feeling of when good things happen, bad things are sure to follow. And I think it was Blake Beiler that had a great article about that and the mental, I'll say, instability that Alabama fans have been in with their basketball program, and now what Nate Oates has built in his fifth year going to the Final Four for the first time in program history. It feels like all of that is behind us, but it's still some baggage that we carry as fans, and you've been a part of that program. And I mean, you were there for that Norfolk State game when absolutely nobody in the building wanted to be there.
No.
And so talk to me a little bit about your feeling as a fan growing up and also a player and now a former player of when good things happen, bad things are sure to follow. What's your response to that? Because Alabama, as you said, has now arrived at the pinnacle of college basketball and is here to stay.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bring up the most overused but also accurate word in sports, and that it's a culture thing, right? And obviously there's a mixture of talent and culture. But my first 2 years, as Oates was turning it, and then Avery's last year, the reason that when good things happen, bad things were sure to follow is because there was talent in the room, but not the culture to stack days on top of each other. And so it breeds inconsistency. But you could tell, I mean, I was texting Oates this earlier, and obviously I've told you all this before, but Oates' first day, our first workout, it was like, whoa. It was an hour workout, but I left it saying, this is different, and this thing's going to turn. Now, how far it's going to turn, you know, Final Four was the furthest thing from our mind. It's, can we be a consistent tournament team? Can we build towards being an above-average SEC team year in and year out? And obviously, we far, far surpassed that. But that's what you see in culture, and that's what he's built over the last few years. And it's not just the structure that's been put into place. I mean, you can break off into a million things. It's the people he's brought in, which is so tough to do in today's transfer portal NIL world, where guys are very me-centric. And that's, I mean, you've built off the whole Mudita thing this year, which has really been so key to the run. Guys care about each other on the team, and it's so infectious. It's so obvious to see. And frankly, it hasn't been that way throughout parts of the year, but it's something that, and obviously now we have a term in Mudita to kind of cling to, but it's something that's been the case since Oates' second year.
Which is defined as vicarious joy through other success, just for our listeners to make sure they know that.
But that's really been a thing for the program since the second year. I mean, you have a guy like Herb Jones who is the definition of a Mudita guy. You know what I mean? And so when you have leaders like that, and I think – Mark Sears has that feel to him. When you have leaders that have that mindset, it sets in motion the rest of it. I mean, even last year with Brandon Miller, obviously he'd have games where he was just the guy. But you could tell he wanted to win above everything else, and he was willing to do whatever it took to win. And because of that, it really fed into a great culture of, hey, the best player is the guy taking charges right now, doing the dirty work. Why am I not doing that? And so it's been something that's been built over years, but you see it kind of in this weird way in this team bubble over into the success we have today.
So I want to ask you this, Britton, because when the scoreboard hit double zeros, right? Alabama is 89-82 going to the Final Four. Watching that game, you're kind of stoic. You're like, wow, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And then the graphic pops up, first Final Four appearance in school history. My reaction was arms straight up, looking at the TV, just like celebrating, like so much joy, saying, we did it, we did it. We're going to the Final Four. We're going to the Final Four. And that's what everybody was saying on Twitter videos, on social media, all over the place. Chris Stewart, Brian Passing, Tom Stipe had it in their call of, we're going to the Final Four. And that's the only thing you could say. There was so much joy in that moment. And I laugh because it's almost like you've been a year too late in your career, right? Leaving Alabama and then Alabama having the number one overall team in the NCAA tournament. You go in to play a year at Samford, you leave Samford. The following year, they win the SoCon and get a bid to the NCAA tournament. Tell me what that moment was like for you when the clock hit zeros and it was official that Alabama was headed to Phoenix.
You know, when I watch basketball, and I'm not trying to say this in any other way, when I watch basketball, it's rarely as a fan. I feel like I'm more analyzing it, especially with me being as close to my playing days as I am still, a first-year retiree. But in that moment, I was a fan. I was the kid that grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, loving the Tide, thinking that this was an inconceivable idea. And beyond that, I definitely related back to the years of, you know, getting to play for Oaks for 3 years and seeing the work that went into everything, into building the program and what it is today. It was just immense joy. And again, I was just kind of a kid again, and it was so cool. I think, you know, because I think the entire fan base kind of had that feel, especially those that have been following it for a long time. I mean, in that game, there were so many times when Clemson could have gone away and just said, you know what, tonight's not our night. They counterpunched every time, and they made Alabama respond every single time, and we did. Every single time. I mean, there was a stretch where everyone's going to talk about for years of them hitting two straight threes and us hitting three straight threes, and then it's just kind of like, okay, we're not missing. But the resolve of this team, the togetherness of this team, and amazingly, these are things that I would not have defined this team as 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of March. Obviously, last year we saw the tragedy of March and the way it can kind of fall apart. And I've already kind of seen a lot of hot takes. We'll get into it in a little bit of what that means in terms of how to define this team or how to compare this team.
And that really is a conversation for the end of the season when you analyze the whole body of work, because there's a monumental task in front of Alabama in playing what is probably, you know, NBA's got 30 teams. This UConn would be the 31st NBA team if you had to field them out right now. But anything can happen to anybody on any given night. And so, yes, it is a monumental task. And that's – I owe an apology to a ton of people who I talked to after the game, whether it was text, phone call, group message. I was like, yeah, this is great, guys. This is awesome. But we have UConn next. And I think it's part of that process to where you're like, all right, let's move on. But there should have been a moment of celebration and a little more reflection and appreciation for what had just been accomplished. But now, as we've entered nearly 10 minutes into this podcast, it's the tallest mountain for Alabama to climb, with possibly another mountain behind it in UConn, and then possibly a national championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's one step at a time, and you don't want to take it too far. Obviously, UConn, they are what they are. They're a buzzsaw. I said it last episode, and I'm not going to downplay that at all. But at the same time, if I were UConn, I think the one team that's left that I would truly be not afraid of, but I I would be a little worried about is Alabama, because Alabama can come into a game and beat anyone by hitting 23s. I mean, they ended up hitting – we ended up hitting 16, is that right, last game, and shot well over 50% in the second half. That's dangerous, especially, you know, you combine hot and good, and that's a really dangerous combination. I feel like that's what Alabama is right now. And hot and good can be great sometimes. And then this is a really, really good Alabama team, obviously. And we'll unpack a little bit more of how we've got here. But when you have, in my opinion, one of, if not the best guards in the entire country, and you can just give them the ball and say, when is this game? UConn better have it double digits by the last four. I'd say Alabama's going to win the game. We've closed games way better than they have all year that have been close. That I think even Dan Hurley was joking about, well, we're terrible at finishing close games, so we got to win all of them in a blowout. And I'm like, well, yeah, I wish we could all do that. But they're a really good team, obviously. They got one of the best centers in the country in Klingon. I always mispronounce his name. Unbelievable at the rim. We're going to have to be able to bring him to the perimeter. So I expect us to use some small ball lineups, put Grant at the five some, and just kind of stretch them out a little bit and see if we can get Klingon away from the rim and attack them that way. But it'll be interesting. I mean, Pringle's played so well. You can't take him off the court. But if we get Latrell back, which, who knows, Lord willing, there have been a lot of indications that he will be back. I mean, you roll out a lineup of Sears, Latrell, Rylan, Estrada, and Grant, and defensively it might not be great. So we might have to not stick to it for a long time. But it would at least test Klingon's ability to play perimeter defense. And then maybe we can just bomb them from deep. But, I would say that, man, this is going to be such a tough game to win. But I think if you had told me 2 weeks ago, granted, I'll give myself credit, I picked it. But if you told me 2 weeks ago that we were going to win all these games, I would say, yeah, it's a winnable draw. But if we're playing the way that we do, or the way that we have the weeks preceding that, I was like, we're going to lose to Charleston in the first round.
Yeah.
This team is getting better every single game. And is playing their absolute best basketball right now, and they're dangerous. I mean, that's an obvious statement for a Final Four team. You don't get there by not being good, but extremely dangerous. And we can win this game. Will we? That's a totally different, idea. We have to play probably our best game of the year by a good margin. But we can win this game. And that's, again, we've talked about last time about how our non-conference scheduling the teams we have. We played UConn last year, and granted, they beat us, but we're not entirely unfamiliar with them. We played really, really tough Power 5 competition. We're not going to be scared of anybody. And so I get really excited about this game, because to be the best, you have to beat the best. And I know Oates is going to be really excited about this matchup and how to attack it.
He said something on the Field of 68 podcast with Jeff Goodman. He said, y'all keep writing us out, you and John Fanta and all these guys. And he said, I want you to say that UConn's going to win by 30, because I can clip that and I can show it to my team in the locker room before the game, which is the exact same strategy that, Bucky used in high school. And that you being in that team, me being in that locker room, he would tell me the night before games to go clip old highlights of Mountain Brook getting beat by Gadsden City or whoever it was, and cycling that 10-second clip over and over for 30 minutes. Britton, you had a team win over College of Charleston, right? Just of complete effort, and what was the game was a lot bigger than the score indicated. Kind of a late comeback there and some trash time for College of Charleston. You had Ramadan Mo step up facing Grand Canyon. You had Nelson have the game of his life versus North Carolina. Jaren Stevenson, aside from the air balls, was phenomenal. You mentioned Pringle's been great. That starting lineup you mentioned earlier, you got Rylan Griffin stepping up and guarding anybody and everyone who has a pulse and is scoring. Rylan's going to be there and be that defensive presence that you need if you're Alabama. You don't want to keep looking down the bench and wanting to say who's next, because that almost covers the entire lineup and the entire rotation, right? I mean, you've got a 12-man scholarship team. You're down to 10 guys, and just about every single person is contributing on a beneficial basis. And so I'm not going to ask you who's key to step up for UConn, but let's get into, you talked about some of the matchups and stretching UConn out. But at this stage, right, when you're a player and you've gone, what's the biggest – platform you've ever played on? What's been the biggest stage? Been a part of or played?
You know, the answer to that in terms of stage has to be the Sweet 16 game, but that was also in front of a COVID crowd, so it feels a little different. You know, a lot of that was thrown off, but definitely not in front of a football stadium. I know that. And there are levels to it. I'll say this about this run we're on is it's every – and you pointed out so well, it is every game it's someone different stepping up. And that goes back to the regular season. I mean, you talk about the Davin Cosby game against Ole Miss. You can talk about Sam Walters having his spots where he's really stepped up and played huge for us. Like, for us to be where we are today, it has taken every single person on that roster to in some way deliver in a positive contribution. And but yeah, I mean, it stands out. Jaren was unbelievable. I mean, to have 19 in a game like that, stepped up. I mean, sometimes, you know, I think stars show, and I hate to say it in that way because sometimes it is the whatever Mark Sears was, 2-3, you know, three star from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that just plays huge. Sometimes there's something to be said for you get guys in the building that have a little pedigree to them, and you don't know when, you don't know how, but they're not afraid of the spotlight, and you know they can step up. And Jaren was awesome. The entire roster's been awesome. Ryland's been unbelievable. Pringle's been unbelievable. I mean, you could keep going and talking about each game, how someone different has stepped up and played so huge, but also how everyone's – I mean, Ryland's been consistently great. Like, if I was an NBA scout, I would be looking at Ryland Griffin right now for his 3-and-D potential. Mark Sears has been one of the best players in this tournament, not even close. And there have been points, you know, I think even the beginning of this past game where I wasn't, like, afraid that he was going to have an off night, but I was like, he just hasn't gotten it going yet.
He's only going to have 14 or 16 points.
Yeah, he was just like, he hasn't gotten it going yet. And then he was, what, 6 of 7 or 6 of 8 from 3 in the second half. He has been big every time we needed him to be big. And that can be said about a lot of guys, but there's discourse right now about whether, you know, Mark Sears is the greatest Alabama basketball player of all time. And, you know, I'm not far enough removed from it to really think it clearly and have, you know, not rose color or crimson colored glasses on in talking about that. But he has certainly put himself up on whatever Mount Rushmore, whatever list with this run, but really with this whole season. You know, he's a second team All-American.
Got snubbed of a Naismith finalist.
Right. First team All-SEC, second team All-American. You can keep going. And I think every Alabama fan who's watched him this year has said this guy's undervalued where he is.
Yeah. So let me ask you this on top of that, because I had the question posed to me by a friend. Who is more valuable? And this is a dumb hypothetical, but because this is a podcast and we can talk about what we want to, we're going to address this. Who's more valuable to Alabama basketball? Take that as you will, this year, this program, this team, the entire program, the history of Alabama in 112 years or whatever it is. Brandon Miller or Mark Sears? That's not a fair question to ask.
That's such an unfair question.
That's not right answer. One guy is your highest rated draft pick of all time. Alabama didn't have the season that they could have and should have had, but what he does for recruiting and development and the future of the team by what he did and what he was here, Brandon Miller is bar none one of the most impactful players in program history. What Mark Sears is doing this year is probably not something we've seen in our lifetime for one player on a team. Now, Brandon Miller had this type season, but he also didn't help lead his team to the Final Four.
I don't know that this season happens without last season. And that's something that's really important to remember. That I'm not going to even really get into this comparison because I think it's stupid. I think each player has individually impacted in such a different way. You know, Brandon Miller last year was probably my favorite college player I can remember watching since, like, this is obviously leaning into my fandom some. But, you know, I grew up a huge J.J. Redick guy. So probably since J.J. Redick, you know, there have been very few guys that I'm like, I love watching them as much as I loved watching Brandon Miller.
Oh, Brandon could do everything on the court, too.
It was unbelievable. But, you know, if we're not the number one seed, who's to say we get Grant Nelson? Who's to say we get Aaron Estrada? So I think a lot of that feeds off of each other. Mark Sears is going to, you know, there's always the saying, you know, he writ his name in the crimson flame, and he's done that all year. I mean, if we had lost the first round game, he still had an unbelievable season. But Mark Sears will never be forgotten in this state, and so especially if you're from the Southeast, from this area, you're a recruit for whatever reason you're listening to this podcast. Don't just look at the style of play. Don't just look at all that stuff. You have a chance to, you know, it's where legends are made. And you have a chance to be a part of the creation of a new history in Alabama basketball right now. Because this is not a, like I said earlier, this is not a program where it's like a one and done, we're never going to be back. Oates even was talking about earlier, he's like, the great programs consistently make Final Fours. We're not trying to make this like a one-time thing. We're trying to build this into a every year we're competing to make a Final Four.
Running out of banner space in Coleman Coliseum.
Man, that Phoenix banner's going to look beautiful too.
It's a good-looking logo.
Oh, it is.
Has as we record this on a Monday night, I need to go buy the J&J shirt. I don't know if that's dropped.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah,
it is fire.
It was beautiful.
All right, so Alabama taking on UConn, NC State taking on Purdue. We don't really do segments here, and I'm stealing this because Pardon My Take and their guests have been absolutely phenomenal. You know, they do like the hot seat, cold throne, best and worst of the week. I'm just going to give a worst of the week. Zach Edey saying that Rick Barnes overlooked him in high school. What an absolute garbage comment. First of all, no one overlooks a 7'4" person. That never happens, ever. And Rick Barnes, he looked past you? There's no way. He was going to go to Purdue, who's Matt Painter, legendary for developing bigs, and whether or not they're successful at the next level, that's kind of their thing. What a stupid comment.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue, congrats to them on making a Final Four. It's an unwatchable product, in my opinion. It's just not fun to watch. And credit to them, it works. And so, like, why would you go away from it? It works. But I hate watching them play. I've never seen a player officiated the way that Zach Edey is. And it made me cheer for Tennessee for 2 hours, which is tough to do. It's really tough to make that one happen. But it was an unbelievable just watching. It frustrated the heck out of me. But, you know, credit to Zach Edey. He's an unbelievable college basketball player and is obviously going to be a Purdue legend for the rest of his life. And so, I saw on Pardon My Take, they were talking about what would Alabama fans – and it shows that they don't have an understanding of Alabama fans, because they were talking about what would Alabama fans give up football-wise to achieve a national title in basketball.
And it depends on the degree of what type of fan you are, because there are some people that would throw the football program away.
Yeah, well, I mean, and PFT was like, I don't even think it amount to an SEC championship for Alabama fans. I was like, brother, you haven't been hearing the discourse I've been hearing, which is that I think for most people I'm around, which granted I'm probably going to be around people that like basketball, they would be willing to give up multiple football national titles in order to win one in basketball. And I think it speaks to, A, how great the basketball fans are and how much there is a love for basketball in the state. But also, it's just like it's a starving fan base, and I think they're well fed on the football side. And so, even though I'm always hungry for more, but yeah, so I saw that as well on Pardon My Take. I thought it was funny.
I just like to joke that there's some Auburn or college football fan out there, or just anti-Alabama fan that sold their soul so Saban would retire, and here we are. What is it? 3-4 months later? 3 months later, Alabama's in the Final Four. What a hilarious turn of events.
Can I just say this? There was obviously the first few minutes, it was just pure joy of what we achieved. And then there was a realization that Auburn fans had nothing to talk to us about in basketball anymore. I mean, we are the superior program, and it's not close. You can look at any numbers you want. You can look at whatever you want to look at. Alabama is the superior program in the state, has been the superior program in the state for the last 4 or 5 years. And the one piece of evidence, that one thing that Auburn had over us, their Final Four run, is gone. I mean, it's still there. They still have it. But we've matched them. They got nothing. And there was a great joy of going on social media and just watching them melt away. That they have nothing left. And, you know, it's a poor, pathetic fan base. I almost feel bad for them a little bit, if not for the fact that I don't.
Almost.
But and then yesterday, watching us just kind of troll Tennessee, like literally can't imagine what it would be like to not have a Final Four.
Imagine not making the Final Four. That's so
just
good.
Imagine not having a Final Four in your school's history. Literally could not imagine.
Couldn't
that.
Be us. So, literally couldn't be us.
It's been a long time coming.
48-hour-long Final Four fan right here. here on the Mean Streets podcast, I want to invite everybody to follow us on social media at Mean Streets Pod. That's Instagram and Twitter, trying to share some Alabama-related content for the remainder of the season. So glad to have the opportunity to share some thoughts with you. Thank you for sticking it out with us. BJ, I will leave you with the final word. If you're new here to us on the podcast, welcome. Thank you for listening. Like and subscribe to the Mean Streets podcast. But we close everything out and give Britton the final word. Once again, Britton Johnson, a 5-year player in the Alabama men's basketball program, 2 years under Avery Johnson, 3 years under Nate Oates, followed by a bonus year at Samford playing for Bucky McMillan. We've got some Samford content on our podcasts as well. You can go check out those old episodes. But Britton, we will leave you with the final word for our listeners to share any thoughts, feelings, and excitement we have for the Final Four coming up this weekend.
When you make a Final Four, and to an extent when you win any kind of championship, but for sure when you make a Final Four, there is a level of immortality there. That in 50 years, this team will be remembered as a Final Four team. This is a team that will never be forgotten. And the job's not finished. I think a lot of Alabama fans have been celebrating as if the job's finished. And if they are to lose the next game, it'd still be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, season in Alabama history. That's
hands down the greatest.
One of the greatest, if not the greatest. There's a lot of discourse there for sure. But for sure the greatest March ending. But either way, immortality, this is not going to ever be forgotten, but also this isn't finished. And I really think we're going to bring a great fight to UConn, and we're going to give them all they can handle. I would not be surprised to see Alabama playing on a Monday night next week. So Roll Tide, unbelievable run. Let's keep it rolling.